Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Welcome in to Jeremy and Joe here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It's Joe and Sean Mapes with Ryan back in studio. Jeremy headed out to watch the Cougs, or work for the Cougs, I guess, to take on Oklahoma State this weekend. So me and Sean hanging out with you for the next 3 hours here at East River 9. Happy hour, 3 to 6. So come on, hang out, enjoy some happy hour. And when you get here, go on over to the promo table, find Anthony, say, go Cougs, and you can get a pair of tickets to see the University of Houston take on the Arizona Wildcats. We've got three pairs of them that we're going to be giving away today. So just come on in, say hi to Anthony, say go Cougs, and you will get a pair of tickets to see U of H versus Arizona next weekend on the 18th. We've got a lot to get to on the show today. We're going to talk some Texans here to start off going into the bye week. We'll talk about the Philadelphia disaster that was last night, both on the diamond and on the field. Lots to get into with that. We'll talk about college football. I mean, I love talking college football with Sean, so it's a great time to do it.
Yep.
But we'll start with the Texans. Bye week. Let's start with the fun stuff.
Okay.
How do you spend your bye week? What are you doing? Are you a red zone guy? No football?
I think Sunday I was looking at going to see the new rock movie, Smashing Machine.
Okay.
I was probably going to do that around 11, try to get back in time for witching hour for Red Zone.
Good call.
And then go into a normal Sunday watching. But normal bye weeks or, I mean, in this case, we'll have a bye week and then a Monday night game. So
it's kind of weird.
Yeah, and we've already had a Monday night game with the Texans in week two. So we've had a lot of practice, and I think I've settled into Red Zone being my go-to, especially in a week like this week where – looking at the games, there's not really anything that super stands out to you. I mean, Jags-Seahawks is going to be pretty important. It's probably the best game of the week.
Yeah, and that sounds weird to say.
And then other than that, I don't know, bunch of stuff that I'm okay if it's in a quad box.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's red zone for sure for me as well. Bears don't play till Monday Night Football, so I got all the free time Sunday.
Lucky you. Yeah. Who has it better than you? Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody. Red zone weekend, that's what it's going to be. For me as well. The Texans need to improve on the most going into the bye week. 713-780-3776 on the text line, the HRP listener line, twitch.tv, ESPN, and ESPN Houston YouTube channel. The Texans got to improve the most, Sean.
And really, they just got to do it against a real team. That's my biggest area of improvement of, hey, listen, you've proven that you can – kind of, I mean, in the fourth quarter, avalanche ass Titans team. They've proven that. They've proven that they can score a lot of points against a Ravens team that gives up a lot of points and didn't have their best player on offense. You proved that. Now you got to do it. And it's funny, again, to say this. Got to do it against Sam Darnold and the Seattle
Seahawks.
But
they're good. They're a good
team.
They
are good. It's going to be in Seattle on Monday night. So, I mean, they got them, they got and then they play the Niners and Broncos. So it's going to be – we're going to find out the first three games after the bye just how real they are. And to me, it is just having that offensive performance against a team that is a real team, a team that's not going to either fire the coach or has half their defense injured.
Yeah, I mean, you look at those next three games, I think it's fair to say they need to go 2-3 in those, like to be a legit contender for the playoffs this year. I think it's really hard to envision the Texans making the playoffs this season going 1-2 in the next two games. When you still have the Bills and the Chiefs and the Chargers on your schedule, still got two games left with the Colts, another game left versus the Jags, which is really the follow-up to that. So really, I'd probably say...
Yeah, I mean, they kind of got to split their next four.
Yeah, really. At minimum. Like, because I keep saying the three, but I keep forgetting they play the Jags, and the Jags are good this year.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of have to beat the Jags.
Yeah.
So it's win one of the next three and then beat the Jags is kind of how you have to go about it.
Yeah, and we'll see I'm curious how many – I would imagine the only game they're favored in, I think they'll still be favored versus Jacksonville at home if the offense performs well in the next three games. I think they'll be a slight favorite at home. I don't think it'll be a big number or anything like that. But I can't imagine they'll be favored at home versus the 49ers or the Broncos. But that's a nice stretch there. Like, it's weird coming out of the bye. You play 9 o'clock Central Time on Monday Night Football versus Seattle. But then those 49ers-Broncos-Jags games, like, it's three straight home games. You don't got to travel. Like, that's a favorable part of your schedule in terms of that aspect of it. You got to go 2-2 minimum. But realistically, like, you want to really get people to buy all the way back in. You got to go 3-4 in your next four games. I think for me, it's not just playing better against better competition, specifically the offensive line. Like, the Titans, they did a good job, even though Jeffrey Simmons is a monster. Like, the pass protection rates and pressure rates and things like that were pretty good against Tennessee, but they're not much of a threat. And CJ was back there all day against the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, except for, like, really one bad breakdown again.
Yeah.
He had all day to throw. Like, what does the offensive line look like coming out of the bye? You know, what are you seeing on film that can translate into those next four games and how you perform? That, to me, is the one area where it's like, okay, that helps the offense work.
Yeah, yeah. If they can prove that they are improved on the offensive line, that'd be huge. I think that'd be honestly more than, you know, I've kind of already seen enough glimpses of Jalen Noel to be like, okay, I think they got something with Noel.
I agree.
Higgins, a little bit less as far as, like, the huge plays, but I've been, I guess, satisfied with Higgins. I think that's just going to be kind of a natural progression for those two rookie receivers throughout the year. It is about the offensive line kind of showing what they got against, like you said, some real competition, and it's going to be some very real competition because the Seahawks are one of the best defenses in the league. So are the Broncos. Niners aren't bad. So you really are going to have to do it against some of the best. And so far this season, the first two games, and I guess with the Jags, we can say the first three games when you play teams that look like playoff teams that are either won their division last year or are tied for first in their division this year, they look bad on offense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of that is natural progression of, you know, Nick Haley being a first-time play caller, getting his feet wet, and weeks 4 and 5 looking better than 1 and 3, or is it because they played bad teams in 4 and 5?
Yeah, it's weird, like, looking at their schedule, because, like, I never thought, like, they'd be 2 and 3 in one of those losses against the Jags. And you're like, well, that's a team that just beat the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. Like, you've lost to three really good football teams so far. I mean, Jacksonville, I think, is the surprise of the NFL for me right now with the way that they're playing. I mean, Liam Cohen's getting the best out of Trevor Lawrence, which I think what scares me is it's still not that good.
Yeah, it's
from
still
Trevor. Like it's still not that good.
Like, the first three plays of that last minute game winning touchdown drive, it was pretty same old Trevor Lawrence taking sacks and throwing the ball nowhere close to a receiver.
And he fell on the ground to score.
Yeah,
a touchdown.
Yeah, it was one really good pass to BTJ on the right sideline. And then another pretty good one to Brown on the left sideline. And then, yeah, falling down and scoring a touchdown where I don't know what Chris Jones was waiting. Chris Jones was like me, just watching the game.
I think he assumed someone touched him. That's the only explanation there can be.
That the play was dead?
He thought the play was dead. That has to be it.
Or else it's terrible stuff.
Honestly, it's still not a good excuse anyways.
No.
Because, you know, play to the whistle.
Yeah.
There's no whistle.
Not very swarmy
Chris Jones. At all. From the defensive side, they were really good, obviously, against Derrick Henry. I thought Tony Pollard the week before still had some success running up the middle. That, to me, seems to be the only, like, fundamental flaw with this defense, which is obviously right now the best in the NFL. But the next three games that you look at, you play Seattle, who has a pretty solid running back combo, and Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker, who they're kind of splitting carries. I mean, Charbonnet's usually been getting more carries.
Yeah.
But they can run the ball well. Then you play Christian McCaffrey. Then you play J.K. Dobbins. And
who's
R.J.
been,
Harvey.
Who's been good.
Who's
not,
been good.
Not Harvey, but Dobbins has been really
like
good.
Dobbins has been really good. Honestly shocked that it's still been this good for him. It was good last year with the Chargers, and it was good this year with the Broncos.
As a R.J. Harvey fantasy owner, so am I.
Disappointed.
I'm surprised.
But that's the only – on the defensive side, because I think you're right. I think we hit the offensive side. But the defensive side, like, okay, what does it look like running up the middle for these next three games? Teams that can run the ball pretty well, and we would extend that to Jacksonville. Like, they did fine against Etienne and Boutel, but what does that look like? Like, that to me is where I would imagine D'Amico, from a defensive perspective, is focusing on, because we know what the secondary is. We know what the pass rushers are.
Yeah.
It's really, like, it's almost nitpicking with the defense.
Yeah, it's running, I mean, even less like running between the tackles. It's like running between the guards.
Yeah.
Is the bugaboo right now for the Texans defense, which, to be fair, doesn't have that many weaknesses, like you said. And even the linebacker core played well last week, and some of that is because you get to just key on facing Derrick Henry because you're not worried about the pass game beating you. So there's a little bit of that in there. And, again, it'll be interesting what they do against a Seattle team that, like you said, really wants to run the ball, is good at running the ball. And even Sam Darnold, like, he could throw over the middle. He's one of those guys that can throw over the middle. There's, I don't know, half the quarterbacks in the league, you're either not scared or you actively want them throwing the ball over the middle because you think something bad is going to happen for the offense. Sam Darnold, again, the last 2 years, isn't that guy. So it'll be interesting, not just for the D-tackles, but also, I think, for the linebackers to kind of build on some strong performances the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we obviously have a lot of time to really preview that game and get into it, but as I think about it, like, the one matchup I'm almost most curious about right now from a Seahawks versus Texans perspective is Derek Stingley Jr. going to follow Jackson Smith and Jigba? Because he is number two in the NFL in receiving yards right now, 534 yards on the season on 34 catches. That's what's crazy. Puka Nacua only has 54 more receiving yards on the season, but he's done it on 18 more receptions.
So
52 catches for 588 is Puka. JSN is 34 catches for 534. He's averaging 15.7 yards per reception.
That's going to be something, because JSN is also a guy who operates in the slot a lot.
Yeah.
He did a lot more the past couple years when they had Metcalf out there, obviously, but this year it's a little bit different. But that is something where, that's going to be really key for the Texans, because we've seen these, you know, top of the league receivers, top-end receivers, when it really gets to winning time, what the opposing teams do is they try to get that guy matched onto Jalen Petrie, and they try to victimize him in a big, you know, when it's 3rd and 8, the last drive of the game, that's what they try to do. So I wonder if that's going to hold, or maybe it's a Cooper Kupp game. Like, it's the Cooper Kupp remember me guys kind of game from someone who used to be in that class of top receiver in the league who would victimize the Texans.
It's funny when you look at the after they play San Francisco and Seattle, the Texans will have played at this moment 4 of the 6 top receiving players in the NFL. I mean, so yeah, Puka Nacua, JSN, Emeka Igbigbu, or Abuka, and then Christian McCaffrey is 6th in the NFL in receiving yards right now.
Wow, that's crazy.
He's out of Garrett Wilson, Quentin Johnson, Zay Flowers, who's 8, so they've played Zay. Like, they've had some competition so far this second year. I think that's why it's impressive what they've done for the most part. I mean, their defense is so good.
Yeah, because Nacua went off against them, and Abuka scored a touchdown, but he wasn't, like, gliding him up. Other than that, they've kind of kept all these guys quiet.
They've done a good job.
Zay Flowers didn't do anything. Tennessee's offense didn't do anything as a whole. And Jacksonville, when they played, I don't think there was – no, I mean, I guess I can just pull up the box score. I don't know why I'm depending on
– all I know is Brian Thomas Jr. drops a lot of passes on that game.
Yeah, no. Leading receiver is their tight end with 61 yards.
Who's out for a while? The Texans won't face him, Brandon Strange. Or Brent Strange?
Brendan?
Whatever. I got close.
Yeah, BTJ, 2 catches, 55 yards. So, yeah, I mean – the Texans, I mean, not a shock. The Texans defense has held all these top receivers to their worst game of the season, or pretty close to the worst game of the season again, except for Nacua, who really just kind of went beast mode the last quarter of that game.
All right, we'll take our first break here of the show today. We're broadcasting live at East River 9. Reminder, coming up to Anthony over at the table, say go Cougs, and you can get a pair of tickets to see the University of Houston take on the Arizona Wildcats on October 18th. To the texter that said you won tickets yesterday, email me, because I don't know what you won tickets to. Maybe it was from Katie Rice Harvest Festival. We'll figure that out. But email me, joe.george@galmedia.com. We'll help you figure that out. I just gave out my email to everyone.
Wait, you gave out the Gal Media?
Yeah.
That's a little bit better.
Yeah, I'll put Junior Bronco, I'll put you on spam. Don't worry. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll talk about the chaos that happened last night. Major League Baseball playoffs. We saw the Philadelphia Phillies get eliminated on maybe the worst play in the postseason of Sean and I's lifetime. Maybe of all time. Let's talk about what we saw from the Eagles, the Tush Push. We're going to all of that next year. It's Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Joe George, Sean Mapes, hanging out with you here today at East River 9. Jeremy's out at the U of H Oklahoma State game coming up. If you want tickets to see the Cougs take on Arizona, come on out to the promo table, say go Cougs. The Anthony got a pair of tickets for that game. We're also giving away a four-pack of tickets here on the air to the Dewberry Farm Fall Festival coming up at the end of the 3 o'clock hour. But last night, Sean, was a chaotic day. We had two elimination games in Major League Baseball. We already saw the Yankees get eliminated on Wednesday, which I know people were very excited to see. Mm-hmm. We saw the Philadelphia Phillies last night lose 2-1.
Yes.
In 11 innings.
Yes.
In what might be the worst playoff loss of our lifetime.
It's up there, man.
Like, I mean,
there's not a lot of, there's not a ton of series ending play in baseball that you can remember just like off the top of your head like that. I mean, obviously we have one here in town with the Jose Altuve home run against Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah.
At least that was a home run hit by one of the best players in the league at the time.
Yeah.
Against a good closer that has plenty of postseason foibles in his past. But there's not a lot of, like, series-ending games where it's a mistake like that.
Uh-huh.
It's basically like the J.R. Smith finals play.
Yeah.
But it like, decided game seven. Like, that one, it was game one.
Yeah.
And it kept the game tied and going into overtime.
Mm-hmm.
This one, like, Kerkren lost his team the game.
Yes, because he just goes to first base. Like, I think I was listening to my take, and they have a Phillies fan on the show, and he was even saying, like, even if he throws it to first base and he angles and the game ends on an error, at least he made the right play.
Yeah.
Like, at least he made the right play.
Yeah.
But, like, to throw home with two outs, when, like, you don't need to just throw to first base, dude, and then goes into the 12th
inning.
Maybe the Philadelphia still alive playing game five on Saturday. Instead, he throws a gosh throw.
I'll be honest, when he threw it to home, in my head, it didn't fully sink in. I was like, oh, there must have been one out. Like, I thought I was mistaken, because obviously the pitcher in the situation would have had a better feel for the situation than I did. So for a split second, I was like, oh, man, that sucks. And then I, like, wait, there's two outs.
Yeah, I'm
like,
I thought there was one out. I was like, is there one out?
Yeah.
I missed something.
No, like, it was Amber Valdez-esque.
Yeah.
It was the wrong throw to make, and it was also a pretty bad throw, like a very bad throw. Although, you know, Rumelcho wasn't, like, in position to make that play.
Well, because he's pointing to first base, Sean.
Yes, because why would he be? Why would he? Why would he try to get in position to make that play? The easiest play, like friggin' JV baseball players make that play.
I know. Like, this is something. Like,
nowhere to throw it.
When my son starts playing T-ball next year, like, that's the thing I expect to see. Like, Kiefer LA says he'll win it as well. You're right. Dodgers.
No, it doesn't matter
for the Dodgers. You won.
No. Like, I mean, yeah.
But this guy's got to go to witness protection.
Yes, this is more of a negative for the Phillies than me that says anything about the Dodgers. The Dodgers were the better team, like, throughout the series. So, like, if they, whatever, didn't win on that play, they might have won next inning.
Yeah, they might have won in the 12th. They might have won game 5. Like, I think the Dodgers are coming out of that series no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's a gut-wrenching loss. I mean, like, I quickly serve, like, the worst endings or most crushing beats. And it's all, like, you know, the Atlanta Falcons from 28-3, you know.
Yeah.
The Yankees, you know, 3-0.
28-3, though, have, like, one play that, like, lost them the game.
Exactly.
It, you know, it's almost worse because there had to be like 20 plays that go perfectly wrong.
Yeah.
For the Falcons, but like, God, there's just like not, there's not many that where it is like, Bart, like that.
Like Bart's not the same.
Yeah, it's, like, no, it's not the same.
Bart and like.
The game went on. The game went on after that.
And then there was game 7.
Yeah.
And Alex Gonzalez had two. Those game 6. Like, don't worry about the camera. I just go to the graphic. I can't fix it. But it's one of those where, like, you can't worry about that moment there because there's still game after.
Yeah.
Like, you could argue. The only one I thought about on this list I saw was 2017 was the Vikings-Saints game.
Vikings Saints.
There's that and it's the Case Keenum pass.
Oh yeah, to Diggs. Yeah,
to Diggs. And there's also the Saints Rams game.
Pass interference.
The pass interference that's missed. That's the other one where I'm like,
tough for the Saints.
Yeah.
But yeah, that.
And then Buckner, of course, boy.
Yeah, Buckner might actually just be the answer because that was to win the World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Titans Rams. Super Bowl.
Draw Dyson.
Yeah.
But that, like, again.
But, like, you're a yard away?
Yeah. It's like if Amari DiMicardo did that in the Super Bowl to win the Super Bowl. Like, it's like dropping the ball on the 1 foot line to lose. Like, it's so bad. I can't think of anything else that's, like, close. Because, like, there's some things where, like, you miss a field goal and you lose in the playoffs. Like, that happens. Like, that. It's like if the kicker like kicked the wrong way, you know.
I know,
like it's terrible.
Like there's just like there's no,
yeah.
There's really no comp for it. Like there's nothing.
And correct me if I'm wrong, and then this will lead us into more Philadelphia sports tragedy. That happened. What I remember is that happened like around halftime of the Eagles Giants game.
I think so. I think the Eagles were still up.
But what I'm saying is that all of Philly like was probably watching both games.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's attention would have been on the Phillies game at that point and watching that. And then, let's go back to Thursday Night Football. Let's see how it goes for you guys trying to stop Cam Scataba.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a worse day in like fandom history than last night. There's only one month. Where you've got
the
NFL, college football, Major League Baseball playoffs, the NBA season starts in a couple weeks, you got the NBA, like we got the NHL starting this last week. It's the only month where like, everything's going at one time. So I don't know. Like,
there's one locally in January that could maybe fit.
Okay.
It's the Texans blowing the lead to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And that was the same weekend as, I believe, the sign-stealing punishments come down.
Yeah, that's good.
I forgot what part of the sign. Because the allegations were in, like, November.
Like it all dropped.
Yeah, I remember it was January is when the, like, hammer came down. It was also the same Monday as the LSU title game.
Yeah.
Which, like, in Houston was a big deal. So, like, that's what – but LSU won. LSU won that game. And they actually didn't, like, lose anything. They just got, whatever, pop or stealing signs. So that's the only thing that really comes close. Like, at least in, like, sports that I can remember off the top of my head. Because normally like, when the Rockets lose in the postseason, it's May. You know, it's an April mess. So there's not a ton going on with the Astros.
I mean, just collectively, like, I don't know, I can't imagine. Like, is there a moment where, I don't know, like, there is, I mean, played a playoff Thursday night game, right? On the night of Astros playoff
Series.
Game?
No, there's a
oh, World Series.
There's an Eagles Texans game
right.
The same day as an Astros Phillies World Series.
Yeah, I don't remember who won that Texans game. I'm guessing not the Texans.
I'm guessing, considering that was 2022. And the Phillies,
Davis Mills.
And the Eagles went to the Super Bowl that year. I'm just going to blindly say the Eagles won that one. But
I think that's one of the most crushing defeats.
But the Astros might have won that game.
I think they might have.
That might have been the no-hitter game.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I almost feel bad for these fans. I really don't.
Like,
we'll go through, like, I think we're going to, who do you dance the graves of the most later in the show?
Yeah.
But we'll take a break here. When we get we got to discuss the other Philadelphia game that happened last night. The Eagles get rolled by Cam Scataboo, Jackson Dart, and the New York Giants. We'll talk about that, the tush push, what we saw in last night's game. That's next year. Broadcasting live from East River 9, Jeremy and Joe here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. I assumed you knew. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9, it's Jeremy and Joe.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, Sean and Joe here with you, filling in. Sean's filling for Jeremy here today on the station. Jeremy back on Monday. Come on, hang out, East River 9 happy hour, Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 here at East River 9. So happy hour happening right now. So come on, hang out, get some golfing, get some. Looks like we got some pickleball going on for some of our coworkers.
Some pickleball, wow.
Yeah, I've seen some people show up. Looks like they're in pickleball gear. So, I think Miss Brenda is going to play some pickleball out here today in Charlotte. Okay. So we'll see how they do out there. Maybe we'll have to go out there and play by play.
I've never played pickleball.
I don't know if I have an interest.
I don't think I've ever like actually seen pickleball outside of like the Michelob commercials where they play pickleball.
Yeah, pretty much when I come here, like I see pickleball.
Yeah.
I think I still want to do like a pickleball tournament at some point for the station. I'm going to do a charity pickleball tournament.
Okay.
That's a lot of work, though.
It is.
We got to find time.
Not for me.
I just
have to find
While you're the executive producer of The Rich Eisen Show, you might regret saying not for me.
I mean, I'm glad I got promoted to executive producer. Can we get that on my
go ahead
on a card somewhere?
The Houston's executive producer of the Rich Eisen Show, Sean Mapes. What do you do, Sean?
I produce.
That's what I do.
I make sure you can hear Rich Eisen on ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Yeah, see,
every day,
five
days a week.
It's all Sean's fault.
Yeah.
All right. Last night, besides the Phillies game, we saw the Eagles lose 34-17 to the New York Giants. The Giants moved to 2-4 on the season. Jackson Dart now 2-1. As the starter for the Giants, weird season so far because the loss is to the Saints, who's awful. Yeah. But Jalen Hurts last night, struggling with the deep stuff. Saquon Barkley, averaged 4.8 yards per carry, but can't really get going. But, man, maybe ESPN was right when they wrote that story about the Eagles being the worst 4-0 team of all time. And even though they weren't, when you actually read the article, maybe the headline was right. Because, man, they do not look good.
No. They were a little bit of a just-getting-away-with-it team. I mean, obviously, you win the Rams game the way that they win that Rams game. What was the other one? They had another just absolute...
the Buccaneers game they nearly gave away.
Yeah, the Bucs game was another one where it just... It felt like they had a loss coming, and obviously they lose last week to Denver in a way where, yeah, that's like if the one or two plays that are going your way when you're winning games don't go your way, you lose 21-17 against a Broncos team that's pretty good. 34-17 on Thursday Night Football against the Giants, that's completely different. That is, you did not play well from start to finish, and this is where you really get the, you know, when you win games in the NFL, like, you're kind of immune from criticism, or at least you're immune from some criticism. Losing two straight in the way that you lost this one, I feel like all the people that were pointing out the flaws in the Eagles team, now you can crush them for it because you lose by three scores against, like you said, a Giants team that looks better with Jackson Dart under center, but they did lose to the Saints. They really need to figure something out, the Eagles do, with explosive plays, whether by pass or in the run game with Saquon Barkley. Because, really, Saquon is having kind of the same year that he had last year, just if you take out the 150-yard touchdown run he had every game, more give or take a game. But he's having a solid year. He's just not having a one of the best running back seasons of the last 20 years type year.
Yeah. Last night after the game, Lane Johnson was meeting with the media, one of the best guys on that team for the Eagles. Yeah. And he said that the Eagles' offense has become too predictable. He says they have spurts where it works, but then defenses figure it out and know what they're going to do. He said last year they did more RPO that made it harder for opposing defenses. When a veteran on your team is publicly acknowledging that your offense is stalling out, is too predictable, that's not good.
Like, no.
And I think it's one of those things where he knows when he says that.
He knows what he's saying.
It's going to catch the attention of the media, the coaching staff. You got this weird A.J. Brown thing going on where there was apparently a meeting between A.J. Brown, Saquon, and Jalen Hurts that A.J. Brown, while he was smirking, denied knowing anything about. All of it's strange.
Yeah.
The Eagles are, again, in this weird place. Like, this really feels like the year where they started 10-1 and then fell apart.
Yeah, I mean, it's what happens in between Super Bowl trips with Nick Sirianni.
I know.
Nick Sirianni has good offensive coordinators. They become head coaches. The next year, their offense is stuck in mud and predictable with the same core that just made the Super Bowl. That's what happened in 22 into 23. That's what's and then after 23, Howie Roseman essentially hires new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio for these guys. They works out. They make the Super Bowl. This time they win the Super Bowl. And then Kellen Moore gets a head coaching job. Sirianni replaces him with Petullo. Doesn't work out. And at a certain point with Nick Sirianni, like, he has to be the worst offensive-minded head coach who's made a Super Bowl and won another one.
Yeah.
Because every time he makes a Super Bowl, it's because they have a future NFL head coach calling the plays.
Yeah.
Whether it's Shane Steichen or Kellen Moore. It seems to me that when it is Nick Sirianni time to run the offense, to call plays or put someone in position to call plays,
it doesn't go well.
It falls apart.
How'd you feel with them running four straight tush pushes last night? I think last night was the night where a lot of people who were okay with the tush push are going to become anti-tush push. I think they killed it last night.
Doing it four straight times?
Four straight times. I think it's people like, this isn't football. Like, once in a while, like, if you're okay with it, you can – you're like, all right, whatever. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's a quarterback sneak.
Yeah, like, stop it. You know, we've seen them be more creative with it this year, doing different plays out of it. My biggest issue – like, the biggest thing with it is it's just there's false starts every single time they run it. And it's the right guard every single time is moving before the ball snapped. Like, I'm not really anti-tush push, but it's a penalty. Like, I cannot believe that they have not started calling it yet. And I know it's hard to, like, what are you going to do, put the referee, like, at the line of scrimmage? Yeah, maybe. Like, he should, like, probably get on his hands and knees and, like, be looking to see who's moving first.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, to me, I don't have any problem with the tush push, .. if you call false start.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with any play in the NFL. If you call the false start, that happens every time you run it. Like, That's the biggest issue with this thing now is just that they move first every single time. And we see it every – like, was it the Chiefs game where this year? That was, like, first, like, kind of a big thing where it's, like, they ran it, like, four times, and on three of them, half the line moved first. Like, that to me, is the biggest issue that I have with the tush push is that it's a play that just gets called differently than every other play on offense the entire game.
Yeah, I think this is where, like, if the referees are like, I don't know how to call this because everything's having such a cluster. Like, they can't. They're like, if the referee says, like, if the referee's like union says, like, it's hard to call false starts because of this play. If that's their excuse, then I don't know what the other alternative is besides honestly getting rid of it. Like,
but I don't really understand how it's harder to call a false start on the tush push than it is on, like, a standard play that has two tight ends.
Yeah.
Like, I guess they're a little bit more bunched up. I guess they're a little bit more, I don't know, congested in there. But it's not that much more, and there should still be the neutral zone where there isn't anybody there. Like, that should still be happening. If that's not happening, call it. Like, yeah. I don't really understand the huge, like, what makes this harder to call false start than a normal goal line play.
But, like they never call it, and it's so obvious. And the worst part is, too, is that the NFL said they were aware of it.
Yeah.
And they said they were going to put an emphasis on the tush push, on false starts. And it happened four straight times last night where I think on at least three of them,
yeah,
if not all four of them, there was a clear false start. So, like, this to me feels like...
That's the issue with it. Yeah. Like, what happens after the play starts isn't that bad,
no,
honestly. But it is just the... If you want to run it every single time, you should be able to run it. You just also shouldn't be able to false start every single time you run it. I don't know. That doesn't seem like it should be controversial. And like you said, if there's something unique about this play, if that is what they're going to say, is that there's something unique about this play that makes it hard to call a false start, then maybe that's the umbrella that you get under to outlaw the play.
Yeah.
Is that something specific about this play just messes with the referee's perception of time and vision where they can't call a false start, then maybe you get rid of the play because they can't call false starts when it happens.
Yeah,
only on this play.
Again, because like it's to your point, like it's no different than a normal QB sneak. The ban for the tush push is not about the play; it's about the push.
Yeah,
it's about the running back and the tight end and the fullback pushing Jalen Hurts across the line of scrimmage, even though it took him four times to get in the end zone last night.
That's the other thing is that it's starting to become much less effective.
Yes.
The fact that they had to run it four straight times, like,
yes,
when they first started doing it, they would get like 3 yards on it every time.
At one point, I was like, they could run this four plays and probably get a first down every time.
Yeah, yeah. Now it seems like they just get like a yard and a half every time.
So yeah, I think it's where like it's two different conversations. It's like, do you have an issue with the push or the lack of penalties? And I think most people would say the penalties is the problem.
Yeah,
because if they started calling the penalties, I wonder what the Eagles would do. Like, what do you? Like, is the juice worth the squeeze? If every other time you try to run the tush push, you get called for a false start.
Yeah, and then
it goes from fourth and inches to fourth and six or fourth and five.
Yeah, and there's the other part of it of if they start calling the false starts, and so you make an emphasis to not false start when you run this play, does it get less effective?
Yeah.
Because I feel like it would get much less effective.
Yeah.
If you don't get the false start. That's the whole point of the penalty false start, is that it's advantageous to start the play before your opponent.
And maybe we just like, you know, or maybe we'll go like in college football 25 and 26, there's a setting which you can limit a player's time they call them out the same amount of plays to stop a player from like spamming the same cheap plays. Josh Beard.
Whoa.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I love you, buddy. What if we did that? What if that was the solution? One tush push per quarter.
I'm sure. You
must designate your tush push like you must designate onside kicks now.
I'm all for anything. Like, you could talk me into you don't get three timeouts per half. You get, whatever, six times 17 for the entire season. Use them as you wish. You can use however many timeouts you want in every game, but it is a grand total for the entire season. I'd be okay with that with tush push. It's like, okay, hey, listen, you get 34 of these per season. Use them well.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That'd be very funny.
Just because you know there'd be a coach that just runs out of timeouts by Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Matt Eberflus, who's still head coach in the NFL, he would have no timeouts left. And it would be so funny, too, like on the bottom of the screen, like there'd just be like a counter.
Yeah, on pace to run out of timeouts.
That would be very funny. All right, when we get back here, well, before we'll get to the college football start, the 4 o'clock hour. I do feel like a sense of jealousy of Cam Scataboo, though, last night. So Sean came up with this idea. Teams you're low-key jealous of, in honor of Jackson Dart, who's fun, and Cam Scataboo. Any sport you want, NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, I guess. We'll get to that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now back to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
All right, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 here, broadcasting live from East River 9. Joe and Sean hanging out with you here until 6 o'clock. Happy hour until 6. We'll give away a family four-pack of Dewberry Farm tickets coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Do that in the next segment. Also, someone texted in the Flyers also lost their opener yesterday. So Philly went 0
for 3. That's tough. That's 0
for 3 yesterday.
It is the opener. Plenty of time.
Yeah.
Plenty of time, but, you know.
So who are you most jealous of right now?
Not Philadelphia.
Not Philadelphia. But I have some Cam Scadaboo jealousy. I like Woody Marks. If I could have Scadaboo instead of Woody Marks, I'd be a happy person.
Yeah.
He's a lunatic.
I think at the very least, like, the tie goes to, oh, my God, I don't want this lunatic on my team.
Yeah.
Like, that's what a lot of it is that he hasn't had, like, the best rookie running back season that we've ever seen. It is just the culture shift and the, like, just vibe shift that we've seen from the Giants. And it's worked out perfectly where they had, what, 3 games this season where they started Russ and they started Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary. And it was a very sad team. It was a very sad, pathetic product culminating in that Sunday night game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And then they make the decision, we're going with Jackson Dart.
Yeah.
Tyrone Tracy gets hurt in that game. We're going with Cam Scadaboo. All of a sudden, it's a fun team now. They you know, just got their first win with those guys on Thursday, last night. But it is at least fun, and you see, like, them on the Thursday night football desk. They're having fun. And, yeah, I sit there, and I'm like, you know what? It would be kind of fun to have this be my team. It would be very fun.
Because
I remember 2023 with the Texans. That was very fun, having the a rookie sensation and the hope that comes with that.
6269 on the text line says Shohei Ohtani is the only correct answer. 6453 says I'm jealous. It's Wheatstraw. Says I'm jealous of the Dodgers' ability to sign a full roster of future Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Shohei, I mean, he's just, it's, no.
He wasn't good, though.
1 for 18.
Yes, yeah.
Strikes out a lot.
Kyle Tucker numbers.
Excuse me. Kyle Tucker, way better than Shohei Ohtani
in this postseason.
In this postseason, way better.
Yeah.
Shohei stunk, and they still beat the Phillies.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't even gotten on base to get picked off at first base, so.
That's true. Kyle did have that happen.
I saw that, and I immediately thought of you, and I was like, I can't text him right now, because this.
I will say, like.
Did
you have any prize picks last night on Les's on the Cubs?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I think I stayed away from the Cubs.
Because it was a good trend early on in the postseason.
It was great.
Where you would go less than,
all of them.
And it would go in my favor.
Yes.
Except when you went more than, then it would not go in your favor, and it would also not go in my favor.
It was very effective reverse jinxing. Yeah, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I was completely uninvolved. Oh, no, Christian Yelich, more than 1.5 hits, runs, RBIs.
That was wrong.
0. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Keep it rolling, Sean.
If you want to give me $10.
No, see, I feel like that breaks
it. If you want to bankroll my reverse jinx of the Cubs.
No.
If you want to have that continue on Saturday.
Yeah,
then I can't be bought.
Yeah, no, I do feel like if I give you the money for it, it's going to blow up in my face.
Okay.
So I feel like it has to be organic, even though I just told you about it.
Okay.
But,
I'll see what I can do.
Is there anyone else you're jealous of?
I mean, this isn't like a recent thing. But, I mean, the Texans, they're pretty close to getting Patrick Mahomes. They weren't that far off from being able to have Patrick Mahomes. And obviously, like, maybe it goes differently, yada, yada, yada. At the same time, a little jealous.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I had that guy.
Yeah, I do feel that jealousy as well of just, like, not having that level of quarterback, even though I like CJ.
Yeah.
He's not Mahomes.
No, he's not. That we've learned that, I think, specifically the last year and a half is whatever you want to, like, whether you want to crush him or however much you want to crush him for the last season, since he big broed Caleb Williams, he's not the kind of quarterback that Mahomes is, that Josh Allen is, like those guys that are at the very top of the league where it doesn't matter what their surroundings are, you still get a, you know, top 5 quarterback performance out of them year in, year out. You don't get that with C.J. Stroud. You just kind of have to live with, he's more of the, he's pretty good, and you know, hopefully you build around him, you can have a really good offense.
Yeah, in the moment right now, like the most jealousy I feel is the three rookies, is Scadaboo, Ibuka, Tyler Warren.
Yep.
Where I'm just like, man, which one of those guys were on the teams that I root for?
Yeah. Well, Tyler
Warren's pretty heavy on that list for me right now.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it's not like you needed a tight end and drafted another tight end.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. You're right.
It's not like that happened.
Nope. That did not happen.
I think for football, it's tough. Like outside of quarterback, it's kind of tough just because you're like, I know that, you know, receivers, dependent position. Running back, pretty dependent position.
Yeah.
The defense with the Texans, like, no, I'm kind of good.
It's funny.
Kind of good with the defense on the Texans. I'm not looking at anyone else being like, man, I wish I had that guy.
No, like, there's nothing within the Rockets now.
I would say there is one, and it's a little Mahomesy.
Who's that?
I mean, I love him in Thompson. Would have preferred to get the number one pick in that draft.
Oh, get Wemby?
That just would have been cooler.
Yeah, I mean, he's, what, 7'5" now, they're saying?
Yeah, he just won't stop growing.
He
can shoot. I think he had the most blocks. He led the league in total blocks last season, but he didn't qualify for league leaders.
I know this is something that happens all the time, that he's worked out with tons of NBA players.
Yeah.
But as, like, a diehard Rockets fan, does it upset you at all that Dream is working out with Wemby?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. Because that's what he does, and also the – Hey, listen, Hakeem Olajuwon, all-time great, Houston Mount Rushmore, probably should be two faces on Houston Mount Rushmore, considering what he did for both the Cougs and the Rockets.
For sure, yeah.
The Hakeem Olajuwon post-up camp, I wouldn't say has like 100% success
story. No, it doesn't.
Kobe did it once, and it worked out for him.
Yeah.
And also, he's kind of just Kobe Bryant, and probably would have worked out for him no matter what.
Totally agree.
Dwight Howard went, I think, like three different summers. Didn't see it bear fruit during the season. So no, I get that. It's like $50,000. He gets like $50,000 every time.
That's what he charges. That's all he charges.
I think it's something like that.
Dude, I think I would charge like Wemby like way more.
$250,000.
Like, well, first of all, I think I would charge a Spurs tax.
Uh huh.
Like you don't play for the Rockets.
Yeah.
Because
David Robinson stole his MVP.
Yeah. Like Giannis. Yeah,
reparations.
Like Giannis is 50. That's fine. But still, like, these guys make millions of dollars. If that's what he's charging, Dream, you got a bad agent, man. Like, you got to be charging way more than that. I know the Rockets give you courtside tickets, but like, you got to be charging way more money than that one.
I'm just post game.
I mean, you got to pay for your kid to go to Stanford. He's gonna get NIL money probably, but you know. All right, we'll take a break here. Let's talk some college football. Who's a lock already for the college football playoff? Who's on the hot seat? James Franklin. Steve Sarkisian? Yep, Google AI, which has not been good with sports, said $50,000.
But it's from Gilbert Arenas, who's also not that reliable.
Yeah, he also, like, you know.
Gilbert Arenas blasts Hakeem Olajuwon for charging $50,000 a workout.
Yeah, well, you know. Sorry, Gilbert. Wouldn't have helped you anyways. You had other issues. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll talk some college football next year. Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.